as well as David Johnson's. Thank you, Mandy, for being here for that. Non, thank you very much, and I do appreciate you all being here and being able to listen and hear what we have to do as far as sharing the work that we've done and continue to do regarding serving men. To give you just a brief overview, that's kind of what I want to do and set the stage kind of to describe where the Office of Family Planning has come with the influence of some of the other, some of the field, as well as tell you why we're doing the things that we're doing regarding men in reproductive health, especially family planning. For those of you who actually aren't as familiar with the Office of Family Planning, the Office of Family Planning is often called Title 10. It is the Title 10, and it's an amendment to the Public Health Service Act of 1944, and we are, quote unquote, the administrators of the Title 10 program, the family planning programs throughout the U.S. We administer them out of 10 regional offices. I won't go more in depth on that, except that that's kind of the framework for where I come from and where the office is situated. We are within the Office of the Secretary within the Department of Health and Human Services, and we fund about 88 grantees and anywhere from about 4,500 to 4,600 clinics every year. Just that's kind of a fluid state. So that's who actually provides our clinical services. Just to give you a brief overview of what I'm going to talk about today is kind of the why, what, and how of male services as far as the Office of Family Planning. So we'll start with just a brief rationale, give you some background of influencing factors for us, as well as different models for male involvement, which many of you probably are familiar with, and then really how we applied it within the office. So the first question we've always been asked ask downtown, who we call Congress, as well as those that make the decisions, why is this important? This is something that we have to tell them. And so, first of all, men's sexual reproductive health needs have been overlooked, as well as, not only that, their involvement is really important as far as addressing sexual and reproductive health, as well as family planning, and providing against the transmission of sexually transmitted infections and unintended pregnancies. And then finally, engaging men, we've also found that it has benefits not only for themselves, which we're very focused on, but also for women and their families. And so when we want to look back at this, we want to make sure that men are actually also provided services for themselves. So in the last item, you see the benefits for men, women, and families. In the past, many of the arguments have been made that we're here to support women, which we are, but we also realize throughout the years and through research that men have their own sexual and reproductive health needs. So if we just take a brief historic look at this, the field of really family planning has been around for a long time, but if we look at it, it's still pretty young, less than 100 years old when we look at the first family planning clinic. We see that down the line, the law has been involved rating family planning clinics, as well as going through here. We actually see that Martin Luther King was a recipient of the Margaret Sanger Award. I think the importance behind this little piece is that family planning is always, reproductive health as well as sexual health, really is a civil rights issue. I think we certainly see it and acknowledge it in the international world, or international perspective, but also if we look domestically, these are really big important pieces that each one of us have, and that it's has an importance just larger than just health. In 1970, like I said, Title 10 was sponsored by Herbert Walker Bush. He was the sponsoring senator, and we have been around since then. Some of the other influencing factors 25 years later was the ICPD, the International Conference on Population Development, which I'll give a little bit more. And then just briefly after that, it was the first male initiative started by the Office of Family Planning. Going back, I just mentioned ICPD. This was a big historical point, I think, in getting family planning, but really addressing men and their role in family planning, reproductive health, and sexual health. It really started a framework to not only link some of the issues that we're familiar with, but also bring in sexually transmitted infections, infertility, sexual dysfunction, as well as violence. sexual and domestic violence. And where it really ties in is there's put an emphasis on the social, cultural, relational context of these. So it's not just addressing male, female, man, woman. It's really the constructs behind that. So looking at it from a cultural perspective, some of the influences, the norms, the mores, all of these factors that really deal with how we address this and what it means when not only we think about different programs, but when we actually implement them. Part of their call to action was really, again, to promote contraceptive use by males, involve them, again, to be supportive of women's roles, but also because that's where the field was at the time, to really support what the ongoing field was doing. And then finally, to encourage men's responsible sexual and reproductive health practices, knowing that not only, again, for themselves, they needed to do this, but for healthy families, healthy relationships, that this was really important. And in the end, one of these things, the benefits of this was also, again, to reduce gender-based violence in other areas that may not be considered always sexual and reproductive health, but really are huge influencing factors related to it. And finally, this is a very long slide, and I certainly won't read from it, but one of the important things of this quote was really, again, it was a large international conference sponsored by WHO, and it's in many other partner agencies. It's really throwing out here the second line, emphasizing men's shared responsibilities. There's a lot of other language in here that's very important, but it's, again, that's where they came out, and that was really a great foundation and building block. It was somewhat of a critical mass had been achieved. Just to take a look at, we're very familiar with these ecological models. This is kind of how we like to look at how this really, again, started the foundation and really, as far as the Office of Family Planning, really influenced us and I think many other agencies, government as well as private agencies, again. So what are we trying to do? What is male involvement? There's somewhat of a new paradigm that came out about this. Again, part of it was based on the ICPD, as well as actually taking a look at family planning, taking a look at reproductive and sexual health also together. So when we look at least involving men, the biggest thing we want to do is really look at men and women and increase their ability to really have that information together, make informed and safe and conscientious decisions regarding their own sexuality as well as also their reproduction, reproductive options. As far as males go, we definitely want to influence their attitudes, their beliefs and practices, and also decrease risk-taking. Take a look at their, increase their respect for human rights entitlements. Again, going back to the civil rights movements, not only domestically, but internationally, decreasing gender-based violence. And then finally, again, encouraging equity among genders. And so again, aside from taking sex, male, female, taking a look at gender and some of the constructs that really promote and reduce gender-based violence. Excuse me, promote freedom and reduce gender-based violence. Many of the things that we want to look at when we're developing this and we took a look at is really how do we measure these advances? And certainly we need evidence for this. So one of the ways that the Office of Family Planning has taken a look at is one, we want to make sure that we increase the number of family planning methods available. Not only choices for individuals, but options. As we know, many of you know that it's difficult to be able to maintain your one option, but so you need others. Some may not fit. There's plenty of options out there, and we want to make sure that we're giving individuals the choices. Reduce the number of STIs, including HIV. Certainly reduce the gender-based violence, as well as intimate partner violence. And then finally, as far as the Office of Family Planning is concerned, we really want to reduce the number of unintended pregnancies. That's one of our major goals of this. So many things that males need, many things that everyone needs when doing any type of project, but the following slides are really come from the when they were the Allen Guttmacher Institute in their own right. So it was really addressing men and saying, not only do men have an influence on females regarding sexual and reproductive health, that they also need, they also have their own needs in this case. So, different types of information. And again, these are very common. I think they're nothing earth-shattering. And these are just a list of, you know, some examples. Many of these, the Office of Family Planning has taken and promoted and really encouraged through many of their projects. So, you know, certainly taking a look at comprehensive sex ed, including STI, HIV, and pregnancy prevention. Really encouraging healthy relationships and promoting fatherhood, as well as, again, where and how to obtain reproductive health services. Several skills need to be built upon this this new information. That includes pregnancy and STI prevention, and that includes how do we use contraceptives appropriately and properly, as well as different ways to screen for risk, how to resist peer pressure, as well as also communication with partners. And finally, some other additional skills are fatherhood skills that Title X hasn't been involved directly, at least as much as we probably could be, but this is something that we certainly have promoted as well, and many of our projects have aspects of this. Different types of counseling, again, making sure that it's much more comprehensive than really providing sexual and reproductive health as you might see in a clinic. And then finally, different types of preventive health services, so sexual history taking, cancer screenings, routine physicals, and my the colleagues down here in the panel, they'll provide some more, you know, concrete examples of some of the things that they've actually done. And then also clinical diagnosis and treatment, certainly contraceptive services, including sterilization, STI, HIV diagnosis and treatment, are all important in that, the larger scheme of sexual and reproductive health. So I guess where we want to go now with this is really some important components. I think we want to make sure at least the what's influenced the Office of Family Planning as far as how we're guiding our projects is really identifying some of these target groups. And that's one of the most important parts. Again, followed by incorporating values of norms of the area, their target communities, the culture in the community. And then finally, making sure this is done in a culturally appropriate means. And what all these, I think, when we take a look at these three components is that it's much larger than just one thing. We want to make sure that these are comprehensive and everything that is done is taken into consideration. Again, going back to ICPD, the culture piece, the social piece, and a lot of these other areas that are truly impacting not just what we may do in a clinic. It's being able to recruit and also providing treatment and services to our clients. So many people are involved. And we'll probably go through this real quick. We all know who advocates are. Community partners, really stakeholders that really have a good idea. Educators, teachers, not just those that are health educators within your clinics or within your health departments. Parents and family are extremely important, as well as different healthcare providers. And again, who's involved? One of the thoughts that we've tried to do, and I think it will be evidenced by the panel, is taking a look at who's involved means a lot larger and a different scope of who you may have already thought of. Federal employees are actually good advocates. We actually do, that's kind of what we do. So it's making sure that you're taking advantage of all these areas. And then finally, so we'll move on this. And so what I was hoping that this first part was going to do was just set up kind of, again, a little base, little foundation of what the Office of Family Planning has been able to do. So in about, again, just a little evolution, 1970s we start, this is, you know, read all the way through. The 80s were actually probably a pivotal piece, came again, that's about 30 years ago, were really when the first male improvement involvement projects came in, and they were very small. It was really addressing men's needs, trying to figure out, well, we know that they need something, we're just not quite sure what it is, we don't know really quite now how to implement this. And to be honest, within at least the family planning clinics, our providers really weren't that open to serving males. That's not really why they came into the field, and well, that's not who we want to serve. I can say that 30 years later, that has changed significantly, and we're certainly very happy about it. And it was just a learning process. I think some were afraid, some didn't know. Really, when you see vaginas all day, when you see a penis walk in the door, what are you supposed to do with it? So as far as the Title X clinics, it was a little difficult. Not only just being comfortable with the new population that came in, but also the different system that you're going to have to deal with, and really the different questions. So in the 90s, I think we, as far as our organization, men came around a little bit more. It was much more focused. We had the foundation of ICPD. We also had a lot more critical mass, and I use that again, but it's true within the office, and this is when we actually started the first male programs as far as the male adolescent projects. And really, their purpose was to really look at young men who were kind of in that we don't really quite know what to do with. I think last night I referred to it as testosterone poisoning. We just don't know what to do with young men at that point. We don't always know what to do with young men. But this was, I think, an attempt by the office to address some of the male issues that are there and that may be coming along down the pike. And then finally in the 2000s, we got some help with NSFG. Men matter, males matter. They were the first time that included in the National Survey of Family Growth, and I think that's actually given the field, especially since I think it was about 2, maybe 3 years ago that the data really started rolling out, a lot of male data as far as family planning, reproductive health, sexual health. We actually got some questions on sexual health on males, and it's really promoted, I think, and given a springboard for the field. As far as the Office of Family Planning, I think back in the 1970s when we started, you probably could say that there might have been one or two males that came into the clinic, and they probably just got lost and didn't know what was happening until they had a penile swab, and then they didn't come back for another 30 years. We're certainly happy to say, though, looking back and the new family planning annual report data that came out, but it's lags a little bit. Just under 6% of our clientele are males, which doesn't seem a lot, but from zero, and it's been creeping up over the past several years, and so we're certainly very pleased with that. As far as research, this is how Title X has really involved itself in this. Well, if we look at kind of down in 97, 98, 03, and 08, and when we give it just a brief, when I give a brief example of kind of what these products are, they're not really hard research. But this is the way that we were able to actually fund these programs. They're really demonstration projects, as we see in 97. And the idea for this was, one, we wanted to find out what was out there, what were some of the barriers to service, and what were some of the needs that that the males needed. And we found this out through 10 different agencies. Most of them were CBOs. And really, they did a yeoman's work as far as getting out there, making contacts, and finding out what are some of those areas that we can exploit in order to really reach males. In 08, we did a lot more with the regional projects administered out. And so our regional offices controlled a lot of that. And then finally in 03, this is, I think, when we really started getting the ball rolling. We had 15 projects, ended up with 14 at the end. And this is the idea here was to really take some evidence, put it into practice, figure out how we can actually address male services. About half of them were education-based, and the other half were clinical-based. And the three colleagues here are from that round. And then in 08, we decided that we'd take some examples and really try to figure out how this is going to apply to Title X, how we can really improve the sexual and reproductive health of males. And by doing this, we are implementing a multi-site research project and taking 5 different agencies in about just over 10 different locations throughout the U.S. And again, implementing a very similar approach. We like to refer to it as the Mandy approach, or DaVita, and she'll give a little bit more on this. But it's very simple. It's really to address kind of the different staff, the different areas of a clinic. So doing some different changes, the environmental changes within a group, within a clinic, training the providers, as well as also doing some outreach. Not something mind-blowing, but in order to be done really well, which Mandy and her staff did fantastically, we thought this was a good approach to address reproductive and sexual health issues with males, and Title 10. Some of the lessons learned here that, one, males really do have an important role in family planning and family planning period, as well as STD prevention. That in order really to get these males and address it, we have to know a little bit more about the community. We need to know about their needs. And once we find that out, we need to make sure that we're implementing these in a culturally appropriate way. And then finally, really service delivery has to be integrated within the whole system. So it's not just the clinic piece. It's not just outreach. It's really taking together those as well as some of the other factors, really the social service factors, the social service providers in that environment that really support many of the goals that we want. As I'm coming very close and I need to speed up a little bit, the real big outcomes that we did find in this last round two, was one, important, that not only by addressing males, we got more males in the door, but we also got more females. So that's, I think, important as far as the family planning field, which Title 10 does represent. Also, innovative strategies for outreach. Really, this is a fantastic, and I'm not gonna steal any of anyone else's thunder going this, I already stole enough of Mandy's, but different strategies for outreach and offsite testing for STDs is really effective with males. And then finally, reproductive health services, just as they are for females as far as the Title 10, act as a primary entry point for the healthcare system. So that's an important piece. Males, again, get lost somewhere, or at least they have historically, and we need to make sure that we find out someplace to get them. Finally, the next steps, this is something that will come up a little bit later, but this is what we've used as far as how we're gonna measure effectiveness how we've done it in the past and in the future. And then finally, I think this is, finally, some of the other things that I will just end up with this slide is, we're focused on research, and that's kind of how the Office of Family Planning has directed their efforts to family planning and sexual health for males. But that also needs to be supplemented by training. And so what we've attempted to do over the past 10 years is to do some male-directed training to our Title 10 providers, which not only encompass family planning clinics, but also CHCs, some of the larger providers, and not just simply a traditional Planned Parenthood or other health department with the OB-GYN clinic. So these are some of the areas that we've tried to do and implement in order to increase the infrastructure of that. And actually, before we close today, I'll actually have, if we do have time, we do have a new male training center. It is the Family Planning Council in Philadelphia, and they are going to have a national male training meeting that we typically have every year, and it will be the 30th of June through the 2nd of July, and I believe many of you have a little handout of that, and that's their flyer out there. So thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I'm sorry that I went long.